What's going on, everyone? It's Isis Daniel, also known as the Millennial Psalm, and we're here for Tasting Thursday. And y'all, we got my guy Richard here today. Of course, you're going to learn more about him in the next coming segment. However, today we are all about wine communication, okay? Now, most people know me from social media at the Millennial Psalm. If you don't follow me already, make sure you do that. Instagram, TikTok, the likes, okay? YouTube, and also Substack. By the way, just like a side note, just because it came to my mind, I've been asked a lot about hosting a wine 101 course that is actually getting ready to come out within the next month. So please make sure you click the link in my bio to learn more. There's a interest button there for you guys. So if you're interested in learning more about wine and just really covering the basics, or for my OGs in wine who just want to brush up on their wine knowledge, this will be a great course for you as well. All right. But all that to say, I'm in the business of wine communication. Now let's talk a little bit of history, okay? A lot of people know when I first started doing Tasting Thursdays, it was really just a way for me to study everything I was learning in my WSET course at Capital Wine School. Shout out to them. But when the pandemic hit, I was already kind of on this driving, I don't know, I was thinking about how there was this gap between consumer and wine, right? Like, we go to retail stores, we purchase our wines, or we go to a wine bar, we drink wine. But the problem was truly, I was learning so much about the intricate details of making wines and even selling wine and the mission behind a lot of labels and brands. And I wanted to kind of break that barrier and allow people to understand that the people making the wine are wine lovers just like the people who are purchasing it. So that's when I started interviewing all of our guests on Tasting Thursdays on Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right? But that was the truth. Like, as far as being a communicator, I wanted to communicate the truth, which is our stories. Wine is a very personal artifact, okay, that has existed long before any other alcoholic beverage was made. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't get me started, y'all. Literally, don't get me started. And maybe I'll talk to you guys about wine history in one of these podcast episodes, because I think it's just really important to understand that wine been here. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can talk about technology and how wine has evolved, and also the consumer's needs when we start discussing clean wine and vegan wines and sustainability. We can do all that, but let's like acknowledge the basics. Wine has been chia, all right? So that's a whole nother topic. That's not even what we're going to talk about today. We cover communication. And I just want to say I thank you guys for listening to this podcast, for enjoying the guest. Oh my gosh, this season has been a lot of fun because, again, we've been having more guests come on and give their expert opinion, not only on the topics, but really shedding light on who we are and where we are as a wine community and culture. So without further ado, okay, let's go ahead and get into this jingle so we can get this interview going, okay? Y'all ready? If you know the song, you better sing along. Tasting Thursday, giddy, Tasting Thursday with your girl, the Millennial Psalm. I am she is me, and we are here for another Tasting Thursday. Let's get into it. Writer, educator, master of wine, and occasional pianist, Richard has worked in wine since 2001, first in London, and now as head of wine Asia for 67 Pall Mall in Singapore. He has written regularly for JancesRobinson.com since 2008, as well as judging, presenting, educating, tweeting, and sometimes singing, okay, about all things vinous. All right, Richard, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure for me to be speaking to you.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I mean, we recently met back when I was still in Paris, and, you know, we have everything that's going on with the Wine Communicator Awards. And actually, let's just pause for a second. I know we just read your intro, but tell us a little bit about who you are and just all the jazz. Give it to me. Let's go.
Sure. My name is Richard Hemming. I am a master of wine based in Singapore. My job right now is to be head of Wine Asia for a group of wine members clubs, which is called 67 Pall Mall. And I've been in the trade for nearly 25 years, started off in retail, and then I went into communication. And I still am writing for Jancis Robinson's website and some other places. So I have done a little bit of everything. And, wine has been my entire career.
Man, I know. I actually just going through your bio, right? Realtor, cellar hand, viticulture assistant, freelance writer, communicator, educator, and as you said, master of wine. I mean, you have literally done it all. How, tell me more about that initial moment when you got into wine, because I know for a lot of us, I say that wine chooses us, we don't choose it. So give us that beginning story of how you first entered into this wine world.
Well, it's very prosaic, really, because I applied for a job at a wine shop that was advertised in the back of a student newspaper where I was studying. And I had no clue about wine at the time, but I'd worked in a shop. So I figured I can do that. And I admit, I was like, okay, wine's going to be interesting. I guess I'll just try it out. I had no plans. I had no background in wine at all. But this company is called Majestic Wine. They are a really good UK retailer. And at the time, they were reasonably small and they were growing quickly and they were training all of their staff. They put you through WSET. And yeah, right. Which to me was like, I had never even heard of it. But I was like, okay, sign me up. And I did all of the levels. And after I'd been there for 6 years, and then I left and went on to do other things. I realized, like, wow, I'm sucked in here. Like, as soon as I started learning about it, started tasting and started talking to customers and enthusing about it, that was it. I was in.
Man, I mean, I think that I had a similar story because I was working actually in the restaurant industry. And in that space, I was able to be, introduced into wine. But honestly, I started taking a wine course at Capital Wine School, shout out to them. And I just was in awe of everything wine. And then being in the restaurant environment, you're able to really practice and taste and to get to know that space. So I love that. However, just like me as well, well, I wouldn't say just like me, a little bit like me. You have a music background as well, right? Come on, talk to me.
Well, I mean, only in a strictly amateur way, but yes,
What?
I. Oh, come on. I mean, I. Okay. All right. You know what? I'm good.
Yes. Come on, tell them. Listen, you have to tell the people
Okay.
exactly who you are. Come on, give it to
All right. I used to play the piano when I was a kid, and I always loved it. I've always owned a piano. And there are a couple of things that connect me to wine through that. So one is that in, oh God, when was it? 10 years ago, more than that probably, I recorded a 90-second song of me singing Grape Varieties at the piano. And it went on YouTube. And at the time, like a couple people were kind enough to say nice things about it. And it kind of has an interesting life now. Every now and then people come to me and say, oh, I saw that video you did when I had hair. That's how long ago
That
it
is
was.
hilarious.
And then more recently than that, I formed a band with some friends in the UK wine trade, specifically to do two gigs, as it turned out, that were for a fundraising. They were a charity thing. So we did, I mean, the standard covers set like you would get from a wedding band, like nothing too ambitious, but we did it pretty well, I think. And so anytime I can integrate music into work is great, but it's rare, I've got to tell you.
I mean, because we're communicators, right? And I think that music is one of the most pure forms of communication because it activates emotion, right? And so it's totally understandable. I am considering, doing some writing and incorporating some wine in there as well. So we'll see. I think I'm actually going to go more of a jingle route. You know how we are. We're just constantly just creating. But I found that with the world of social media and short form content and trying to help people really remember and, important aspects of wine, I'm like, what if we just like make cute jingles, and make it memorable, fun, easy to access, all the things, right? I don't know. That's something I was thinking about. But, oh, go ahead, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say your jingles on this podcast are great, you know, and that's one of the things that people know you for. No, it's true. And actually, one of the nice things about communication in general these days is that you can do everything yourself. So if it's a podcast or a video, or even if you're just writing, you know, you can do all of the artwork, you can do all of the photography, the recording, you can put a track together, record yourself, multi-track yourself, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And it's accessible. And it means that people, you know, can be a complete self-contained creative force, which is so awesome.
I agree. And I think, you know, when we go back in history, I believe that what would you say around 2008, 2007, I think that was when in the world of communication and social media started to evolve, where people were creating their own long form content on YouTube and MySpace, and they're able to really put their content out and allow the masses to see it for the first time without needing that middleman of a publisher, you know, or anyone else, you know what I mean? But speaking of, let's actually dive into this a little deeper. I would like to know, well, if you would, describe what wine communication is to you, or the essence of it.
Wine communication is about sharing the passion you have for wine with the right target audience using the right medium. Hmm. And so that means you have to adjust what you're saying, how you're saying it, what platform you're using, according to who you want to reach. And it's one of the things maybe that the wine trade hasn't always done so well. It's definitely better these days, precisely because you said we have access to all these different routes that allow us to reach people. So it's about communicating your passion, about transmitting that love for wine. That is always at the core. Mm-hmm. But to make it effective means you have to understand who you're talking to and what you really want to say.
Hmm. I really like that. I kind of want you to expand more on the right medium. What does that mean?
Well, when I started out, and it wasn't even that long ago, but it makes me sound like I'm prehistoric. The thing I really wanted was a newspaper column, right? Mm-hmm. That was my big ambition. I wanted to be in a UK newspaper magazine, like on a Saturday. And those columns do still exist, but they're really threadbare now. And there's only less than half of there were when I was writing. And I'm talking 2007. Mm-hmm. So really not that long ago. Now, of course, the right medium could be Substack, which I use, which I think is a really great way of having a very clear interface.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to get into that, actually.
It's great. Like, I've been on it for just over a year. Actually, I don't use it for wine stuff. I use it for other stuff. But I follow a lot of wine people on there. I've been on Twitter since it started, and it's not really active where I am now in Singapore. But in the UK, for the UK wine trade to talk to each other, that's still a really important place. And it definitely has its shortcomings, no question. But I still find it a really useful way to talk to people. So it depends, obviously. For me, writing is the main thing. Increasingly now it's video and Instagram and TikTok. And obviously that's much, much more your domain. So you can tell me about that.
Yep. I mean, it's so funny because, and I tell people this all the time, and I'm sure people are just like annoyed or roll their eyes every time I talk about it. But before becoming the Millennial Psalm, I never went online, really. I was the type of person who would delete the app and just be gone for months. But I was able to use social media as a tool to help me study when I started my WSET journey, right?
Right.
But what I found on accident, discovered on accident, was that I do have a talent for breaking down information into bite-sized pieces, which is why short form really became a success for me. But it's just, sometimes I do wonder if the accessibility and the demand of short form content is kind of dampening what would be long form or written content. So let's actually talk about that, because I know there are a lot of writers who, and even, you know, people who usually make long form video content that are wishing or trying to find ways to get people to have the, what am I trying to say? I'm my brain is saying brain capacity, but to be able to have the bandwidth to stay and watch or to read longer form content. What are your views on that? I'm sorry it didn't come out right.
No. I've got you. It was a long sentence.
Yeah.
So, but this is exactly the thing. Like, it kind of illustrates the point. Sorry, I'm being cheeky. But the thing is that people who watch TikTok and Instagram primarily naturally have shorter attention spans.
That's
I think.
I'm trying to say. There it is.
And if you are, you know, when I see those long form articles and they're like linked from LinkedIn or whatever, and it says 7-minute read, I'm like, shit, I don't have 7 minutes. Like, and I'm kind of looking at it, scrolling through fast, trying to find the highlights. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it really has affected how we consume traditional longer form stories. Maybe Substack is better at enticing people back into that platform. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think it's a problem. Though, actually, I think many ways that what the kind of communication that you had been doing with short form video is going to reach so many more people because it's shareable. Like you said, it's bite size information and you speak in a very natural way that sounds like somebody who's actually enjoying a glass of wine, not trying to prove that they know this or that.
Right.
That's right. And that's what video does instantly. Whereas with writing, it takes a bit more time. You have to kind of know who they are and, you know, it requires more of an investment on your part. And so there is room for both, but they are definitely very different ways of communicating.
So in this world where, you know, the attention span is shorter, but say for a particular artist or a particular communicator, they specialize in this longer form, how do we attract our audience if you open up an article and it says 7 minutes, you're like, I don't think I have the time. How do you attract your people?
Well, I always had this method when I was writing that my first paragraph would be about something completely unrelated to the subject, so long as it was entertaining. What I wanted to do was try and draw people in with something that is going to catch their eye and make them intrigued and tease what I'm about to talk about for sure. But it didn't need to be any kind of like exposition about when I went to this vineyard area, which is full of the most amazing terroir. That's a real turnoff because anybody can write that kind of thing and it doesn't really tell you anything new. So I always tried to write something, even if it was kind of random and off the wall. It didn't always work. And, you know, that's not going to suit everybody and it won't necessarily appeal to everybody. But I figure you have, whether it's in writing or video, the first 20 seconds, the first 100 words to make an impression and to keep somebody reading or watching. And if you don't get them, then you've lost it. And it didn't always work, but it was what I tried to do because otherwise you're just sort of repeating very often what other people can say and you're not using your own voice.
Ooh, and can we talk about that actually? Okay, wonderful. One thing I don't like about communication today is that I think that we lack creativity and authentic thought. What I see a lot of is content that is being repurposed. You see someone else talking about a topic and then you take theirs and you might add something, maybe sometimes not even that, your own idea and thought to it. But for the most part, everything is just recycled. And I think, again, I don't want to, for someone who's in the world of social media, I guess maybe I just hold us to a higher standard, but I would love to know your thoughts on that as well. Are we in a space where, because we have so much short form content and we're trying our best just to grab everyone's attention and we're almost fighting for the same attention, that we've lost our authentic voice?
I think some people take the easy way out and they basically rip off other people. Mm-hmm. And it happens in every sector. And to be fair, you know, it happened pre-social media where people would just basically copy and paste out of a article and, you know, vaguely reword it, but pass it off as their own. Mm-hmm. And I still think, however, that original voices still rise to the top. Mm. You are a very good example of that. And there's other great people who are doing the same kind of thing, just speaking in their own way, finding their audience, and then, you know, being truthful, telling them what they really think about this or that wine. That is what comes across.
Mm. And so, I mean, I think that's a great way to transition into the Wine Communicator Awards, right? Because that is what you're focusing on, allowing space for those creative voices, especially ones that otherwise we wouldn't know because, you know, they're in these remote, small areas that you wouldn't hear about or whatever else. Tell me more about that and how we are able to highlight these voices.
Yeah, sure. It's a project that is very, very dear to my heart. And let me give you just a minute of background, if you don't mind. Yes. So when I started out, I got into writing actually through competitions. I entered these competitions and actually I never won a thing, but it was precisely that sort of spurred me on. I'm like, how am I not good enough? What is not happening here? I feel like what I'm doing is so good, but it's not being recognized. Anyway, it worked out for me in the end. And then I continued entering these competitions because I wanted to benchmark myself. And let's face it, because I wanted the recognition. I wanted to know if I was on the same kind of stage as some of these great names. And as you know, there is not a lot of money in wine communication these days.
Yeah.
So I had the opportunity in my current job to set up something which is partially sponsored, but it is mostly funded by 67 Pall Mall. Mm-hmm. And it is a new wine competition for any wine communicator in any medium, anywhere in the world, which I'm pretty sure is a first.
First, yeah.
And we had our first set of entries this year, and we've received hundreds and hundreds of entries that are audio, video, and writing, and which are currently being judged by your good self.
Yes.
And a panel of amazing judges, which I know who the identity of these people, and obviously we're not going to name any names here, but what is so exciting to me is that we have really fantastic, well-established names who have entered. And then, as you were just saying, some of these, unknown to me at least, new, younger communicators that are trying something new out, just maybe doing it for their own satisfaction, not because they want it to be a career or whatever. And it's great.
Yes.
It's exciting and it's dynamic and energetic, and they're saying something original. And some of them are doing it in really unique and bizarre ways.
Mm.
In some cases, you're going to find out when you start checking these out. And so it's just a chance to celebrate them, you know, like it's not maybe going to completely revolutionize the world of wine communication. That's not the point. It's more about just shining a light on some people.
Well, I would challenge you and say that maybe it will. So as you know, and a lot of people, my listeners obviously know, I'm conducting a wine culture case study just to understand where we are right now. I know that across the globe, we are seeing the trend of wine and wine interest and consumption declining. And one of the main focuses that I have is understanding where we are. And the best way we can understand where we are is to look at wine artifacts, right? Which is through wine art, literature, through communications, how are we expressing wine? So I would like to know, based off of what you've seen, and I will see what I see as well, but I would like to know from your point of view, what is the united story that's being told from the wine art that you have been judging already and that I'm getting into? And I know that might be a dense, like pretty intense question.
No, it's good. But there are multiple threads, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is ultimately very important, because there are trade-facing writers who are doing very technical articles about winemaking or some new viticultural practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are very mainstream, very casual style communicators that are just trying to get somebody to maybe consider picking up this bottle when they go into the store next. Mm-hmm. So those two types of communication are so different. Mm-hmm. But the thing they have in common is an optimism about wine. Mm-hmm. And what I found, which is so heartening, is that people are looking for the good. They are finding this new thing that's going on, and they're excited about telling you about this new vintage. So most of the communication, the vast majority, is focused on the positive. What wine can bring you that will enhance your life, just give you a little smile, lift up your weekend, because that's what it's all about after all. I mean, this is a product that is just designed to bring pleasure.
Yes.
And to be shared. Mm-hmm. And so the vast majority of people are spreading that message just in a very, very different way. It can appear to be an extremely technical article, mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's got that objective of, like, let's celebrate the good stuff.
Mm. I love that. I love that you are seeing optimism, because obviously we're in wine because we love it and we see how amazing it is, and being able to travel the world, and even if you don't travel the world, to travel just via a glass of wine, right? It exists and it's meaningful. But one thing that I've been searching for to understand is the unique wine belief. I think that whenever I have the conversation of culture, as everyone knows, there's a definition of culture and then there's the interpretation. And everyone has their own interpretation of the word culture, and they apply it as if it is the definition. So mm-hmm. in order to kind of break that down, I realize, and especially, you know, doing more reading on, you know, the influencers of purchasing, and again, culture influences and all of that, is that it all starts with a belief. It starts with your identity. So let's just go slightly deeper than the last question and say and ask, based off of what you've seen, what do you believe our united belief about wine is?
Hmm.
Yeah.
What is people's wine belief? I think at the core, it's related to this concept that wine is there to be a pleasure, mm-hmm. that is there to enhance our lives. When people lose sight of that, you can really tell, because it becomes about one-upmanship or mm-hmm. showing off that you have this vintage or some unicorn bottle that, you know, you can flash the label on social media and so on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that exists, but I think most people who are communicating, and certainly the people who are entering this competition, they realize that it's not about that. Mm-hmm. It's about sharing that experience. You've probably been asked this a whole ton of times, like, what is your favorite wine? It's one of these questions that gets asked. And there's no answer really that can possibly satisfy that. But what it always reminds me of is, okay, well, what I actually need to tell you is the context of this wine that I had. Like, it doesn't really matter what the wine was, but it so happened that I was with these people,
yes.
at this place, mm-hmm. on this day. That's why it was so awesome. And the wine happened to be whatever this wine was.
Right.
Like, it could have probably been a bunch of different wines, but nobody ever says, oh, it was, you know, this top vintage of this top Bordeaux that I was tasting in laboratory conditions in some competition somewhere, because yeah. that doesn't stay with you. My point in that is, I suppose, to answer your question, firstly, people finding that the purpose of wine is to enhance our enjoyment. And then secondly, and maybe this is the real crux of the matter, is that it doesn't really matter unless you share it with somebody. Mm. When you share it with somebody, you double the experience and more, because it is about bringing people together over a glass.
Oh my gosh. Yes. 1,000% yes. Because, you know, so a lot of people have been telling me they believe the belief is that wine is supposed to enhance growth. And, you know, I've also been hearing a lot of people responding with that they believe that wine is, well, I've heard a lot of different examples of what they believe wine, the wine belief is. And I think what you just said summarized everyone's added opinion, which is to share it with somebody. It always goes back to community. It always goes back to, as you continue to drink more wine, your palate evolves, you become more open-minded about different varieties and regions, you actually start to explore food more. And when we talk about, you know, as wine professionals, the beautiful experiences that we have. I mean, whenever someone asks me what my favorite wine is, I'm always like, okay, you know, because it's you're right. It's truly the experience that makes you fall in love with wine, up and including to my first wine course. I'm here because when I went to Capital Wine School and I took that wine 101 course, which why was I there? Assam saw me, said, hey, girl, you like wine? Why don't you take a class and see if you love it? We need more, you know, African-American women in the industry. But when I walked into that classroom and we were tasting all of those wines, wines that I'd never heard of, varieties, the word variety in the way of wine, I didn't even grasp at that time, right? And understanding the struggle of the vine and just all the intricate details of what makes wine wine, I fell in love. But more importantly, I had to tell everybody about it.
Yeah, isn't that just it? You know, it's not an introspective pursuit. Wine only really has value if you share it with people. And actually, you could say the same thing about music and literature and so on. You want to talk about it with people, and you want to go and listen to something with other people and be in the room with people. And, you know, if you read a great book, what's the thing you go and tell everyone? You got to read it we can share, you know. So that's, wine has the same function.
All right, well, we've been talking. We've been talking for a while. So how can we best support you, Richard? Like, give us all the deets as we're rounding out. Talk to us.
Well, if you're in Singapore, then come to 67 Pall Mall and ask for me, and I will share a glass with you at the bar. That's really the best way to find me these days.
Yeah.
I'm on social media, but I'm mostly inactive. You know, I'm back to the good old lurking days. So I'm just checking people out. It's kind of creepy.
I used to be a ghost follower, so I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. But actually, in all seriousness, my website is richardhemmingmw.com, and that links to whatever else I'm doing. So if people want to find out more or see that stupid video from when I had hair, then you can find it there.
All right. And can you give us a little bit more about the awards? I know that the ceremony is going to be on September 6th, live in London and in Singapore, and streaming on 67palmile.tv, right?
Yes. So we have our own TV channel. We produce original content, and that will be an opportunity for us to stream this ceremony. So the idea is with that is that we really want to reach everybody in every market. So the timing for the awards is going to be not great for North America, unfortunately, but there will be that opportunity to tune in, to watch it back. We will be live in London and Singapore, and then also actually in Melbourne, where we have a club coming as well. So we're covering a lot of the world. And the point of the awards, like I said at the beginning, is to find and celebrate the best wine communicators on any medium. So for those people who might be listening now and weren't aware of it or didn't get a chance to enter this year, we are intending to run this every year. So you can see information at 67awards.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining me today. I actually had a lot of fun in our conversations, you know, because when you have a podcast, I think sometimes what you'll do is you'll find people who are like-minded, and you want someone who's able to come on and share their own, you know, view and not be afraid to say the controversial things. So thank you so much for your honesty, for being transparent, telling your story, and just joining. Okay. Happy Tasting Thursday. Okay.
Thanks, Isis. That was great.
Thank you.